Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Tom Boyd, and he'll be answering your questions on magnificent roosterfish. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing, also hashtag FlyFishing, and tonight, hashtag RoosterFish. In fact, if you have a moment, do it now while you're listening to the show, we'd sure appreciate it. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group Inc. doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Tom Boyd about magnificent roosterfish. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly, Kodiak, and Bruin rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world. Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. Again, that's BigSkyInflatables.com. Before we introduce Tom, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll give away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and look for the link under tonight's section that says Register for our free drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Tom's books, both Trout, Salmon, and Char, and Saltwater's Greatest Game Fish. Here's how you can win. You must be the first or second person to answer the question I ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something that Tom and I talk about during the show. You must submit your answer along with your name and location in the text box on our homepage. It's the same box that you can ask questions in during the show, so you'll find that on our homepage. Now, listen closely, pay attention, take notes, type fast, and when we do our little competition here, you may be the proud winners of one of those two books, and you'll have your choice. You can either have the book on Salmon, Trout, and Char or Saltwater's Greatest Game Fish. So listen carefully, and hopefully you'll be the proud winners of one of Tom's really great books. Our guest tonight is Tom Boyd. Tom is a fishing researcher and consultant, instructor, outdoor writer, editor, and lecturer. Tom has over 60 years experience as a catch and release fly fisherman. And as a professional fly fisherman, he has traveled the world in pursuit of fresh and saltwater species. He has consulted with manufacturers, lodges, and governments on many aspects of fly fishing. Tom has taken countless world record-sized fish, including IGFA regulations, including a 340-pound blue marlin on 20-pound tippet, and along with black stripe marlin and also a giant sailfish, and a 41.5-pound roosterfish on a 10-pound tippet. Also a 9-pound, 10-ounce Labrador brook trout. So, very accomplished angler. Tom's Saltwater book is Saltwater's Greatest Game Fish, Techniques and Tactics to Catch the Top 35 Species. Tom includes notes on rankings and speed and is the only person to have caught all the species in the book. Tom and son Jeff Boyd wrote Trout, Salmon, and Char, a Master Guide to Understanding Their Behavior and the Top Techniques to Catch Them. This book is groundbreaking with revolutionary information on salmonid behavior and often groundbreaking techniques to catch them. Tom's new book, co-authored with his son Jeff, is titled Predator and Prey, Behavior and Motion, and this will be available in 2026. Tom teaches techniques in blue, green, shallow, and flats, and freshwater, and has caught over 250 different game fish species from the Arctic to Terra del Fuego, and he specializes in game fish behavior and developing often unique techniques to catch even the toughest species. Tom and his son Jeff have been nominated IGFA's Hall of Fame by many, including legend Stu App. Tom, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thanks very much, Roger. I'm really pleased to be here.
Well, good, good. Yeah, we've had Tom here before several times on different topics, and it's always been a highly informative show. In fact, just flipping over here on Tom's page on our website, you can see the previous shows. We did a show, Saltwater's Greatest Game Fish, The State of the Char, Trout, Salmon, and Char, and now Magnificent Rooster Fish. So check those other shows out. They're in our archive, where you can just go to Tom's speakers page, and you'll see those listed there, and you can find those there. So enjoy. I know you'll find those highly informative, as will tonight's show. Tom always promises me that, and he always delivers. So here we go. Yeah, so Tom, I know you've been excited about this. You've talked to me about this over the past few years, in fact, and we're finally getting around to doing the show. But what makes roosterfish one of the most challenging, in your mind, saltwater fish to catch on a fly?
Oh, Roger, let me say one thing before I answer that question, and that's just thank you. You know, I've been a researcher and teacher of fly fishing techniques for most of my life, and your program is along the lines of what I do. I mean, it really contributes to the learning curve of anglers. I mean, it's something that they can go to if they want to find out about a particular species. And you've done, so many shows with so many famous and accomplished anglers that it's really a pleasure and an honor to do your show. And I think your show really contributes to the same kind of thing that my son Jeff and I work for, and that's to help fishermen and anglers and to promote fly fishing. So thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate your kind words. Yeah.
Well, to answer your question, what makes roosterfish so challenging is basically their senses. It's pretty well known, like the acute sense of smell that salmon have, or sharks can detect a drop of blood in a billion gallons of water. Well, I think that the roosterfish has the greatest senses of any of the saltwater species that I'm aware of. And I think that's what helps make them so difficult to catch. Their auditory senses are, again, I think, the most acute of any saltwater species. They can detect sound from so far away. Their swim bladder is connected to their brain pan, and this accentuates their hearing capabilities. And I think it's an absolutely enhanced evolutionary improvement that they have that allows them to detect something. But if it's not real, they like the low frequencies. If it's not real, you can drive them away. But when they get up close, the sense that kicks in is vision. They're drawn to a fly or a bait fish or a lure primarily from distance with their auditory capabilities. But when they get up close, their vision kicks in. And I think they're the most, if you don't have a really good fly pattern, you can forget about it. I mean, the easiest way to catch them is to fool them. And you have to get something that imitates what they're eating and does a really good job. You need some really high-tech fly. Buying a cheap fly off the shelf isn't going to catch a rooster fish. They're the toughest one to catch.
Yeah, we can talk about flies a little later on. And, yeah, I know you have some specialties yourself for that purpose.
You bet.
Well, in the auditory and visual senses that they have, they're being used in almost like a dishwasher environment, right? I mean, with the surf and all that's going on and the noise of where they like to feed, it seems like, their visual and auditory have to separate all that ambient noise, right, to zero
Absolutely.
In on their prey. Yeah.
I always say there's two different really areas. There's for rooster fish. There's Baja, which is, and a few other areas, one Linda Beach near Zihuatanejo, that are, calm areas. But typically in the open Pacific, you find rooster fish in whitewater. They love it when it's rough. If it's turbulent, that's where they're at. They like, you know, rocks. They like underwater reefs. They like structure. That's what they're drawn to. And I think with their great vision and their great hearing, when they're in murky water and turbulent water, they have a tremendous advantage over bait fish. They can see and hear well above the abilities of any bait fish that they're feeding on, and I think that acts as a great advantage. And I think that's why they seek out the rough structure and the rough water. Bait fish, and they're tremendously strong swimmers. I mean, these are not only quick and fast, they are extremely powerful fish. So when you find them in rough water, they're in their home element. This is the kind of stuff that they love and they flourish in.
Can you kind of explain the role of their, you know, they have this magnificent dorsal fin, dorsal comb. Can you explain how roosterfish use that to hunt and herd their bait fish?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of similar if you think about, like, a sailfish. As a matter of fact, I've seen roosterfish and sailfish herd bait fish together. But I think when they raise their sail, they enhance their presence, their profile. They look bigger, and they'll use that to herd the bait fish, and often, like sardine de gallo, which is one of their favorite bait fish, they'll drive them to the surface and then feed on them. But their dorsal fin, not only when they're herding bait fish, but when they're in rough water, that allows them, using that dorsal, that fin, it allows them to turn, you know, on a dime. I mean, instantly. They can change directions, you know, instantly. It makes them so quick. Bait fish, they form in a ball to protect themselves. And another protective feature is they're small and they're really quick and they can dart. And that works against many, many predatory fish, but not so well against roosterfish, because that dorsal enables them to turn, you know, so quickly. It's really a great enhancement for them, not only herding but attacking bait fish, as well as the bait fish pods in open water, but as well as bait fish in turbulent water.
We have a question just came in on the internet. Roy Fukushima asks, he's out in Orange, California. He says, how do you find rooster fish? Foaming on bait fish, chumming, trolling lures, then switching with streamers, thinking like what's done many times with sailfish, I think. Can you give him some insight?
Sure. Well, I just finished an article for the Complete Fly Fisherman magazine. P.J. Jacobs and Lizelle Jacobs, and a lot of it was on techniques. And P.J., when I was writing the article, normally they're 2,500, 3,000-word articles. And when I was writing it, I asked P.J., how long do you want me to make this, P.J.? And he said, well, you know, write until you don't have anything to write about. And I said, well, that would be a book, but if it's on rooster fish. But I wrote a 12,500-word article, and they published, I sent you, I think, a copy of the first edition.
Right.
I think it's the longest one P.J. ever put in print. The second half is all on techniques, and some of the ones that you just mentioned are techniques. The most important thing, I think, technique is, one, before you go, do your research. Find out when, where, and how, where the best places are to go. Pick a good place and pick a good time. Two, when you get there, you got to look at everything. I mean, analyze everything. You just don't get there walking in the water, or if you're in a skiff, or, you know, start casting. The most important thing you have, the most important asset, is your brain. So what you want to do is analyze the situation. I mean, if you've got a nice, perfect sandy beach, you're not going to find roosters there. Rooster fish, they like the differences. So things like water temperature, I mean, is there an El Nino, a La Nina? Because the roosters are affected by cold water. So you analyze the conditions up front. When you get there, there's, in my article, I outline 11 different techniques, completely different techniques to catch rooster fish. As far as fly fishermen go, probably the most successful way, and again, it depends on where you're at, because your techniques in a nice, calm area like the Baja or certain other areas are different than you would use in the open Pacific. So my favorite technique, though, is bridle rigging live bait fish, and the bait fish should be whatever the prevailing bait fish is. You know, they can be a bonita, they can be a sardine de gallo, they could be a mullet, and so anchovies are a little too small. But in any event, you want to troll them live. You want to keep the live bait fish that you're trolling in the wake of your boat, because you want to camouflage them. Again, rooster fish are such visual predators. The boat wake helps camouflage your offerings, not so much your bait fish. They make a lot of noise and they're obvious, but when you want to replace, when you see the roosters attack, and they're very obvious attackers, often you can see their comb and announces their presence. So what you want to do is, when you see one, you pull your live bridle rig bait fish and replace it with your fly. You want to keep the fly, again, in that wake. So that's my favorite technique. Another one, not for me, I'm too darn old, but if you're fishing the calmer waters, I'll go the other way, like in Baja or Linda Beach in Zihuatanejo, some of these areas, you comb the beach and you look for structure. You look for bird action. You read the circumstances. Often you can see the rooster fish because they swim on the surface. There's no other fish that I'm aware of that likes the surface as much as rooster fish do. And with that dorsal fin, they're pretty obvious. So you comb the beach till you see them, and a lot of times this turns into a track meet. When I was younger, I know, I've got a lot of miles running down the beaches, particularly up near Loretta. But you chase the fish, but you want to be able to, in these conditions, you want to be able to match the hatch. Rooster fish, a lot of times what I'll do is try to catch bait fish and see what bait fish prevails, and then I want to match that with the size fly that I can. And again, there's only maybe a half a dozen or so different patterns that they really like and enjoy and feast on, but they come in various sizes. So this is kind of like trout fishing. As best you can, you want to match the hatch. There, I won't go through, we don't have the time to go through all the other techniques, but yeah, that's one for the Pacific and one for rough waters and one for calm waters.
Right. Okay, good. Do the rooster fish display any seasonal migrations in Costa Rica? And that's where you're talking about the Pacific fishing.
Yeah, they do everywhere. Their range is from a few islands north of in Ecuador and northern Peru. Offshore, they're in the Galapagos. They got there through a series of seamounts, you know, maybe in the last ice age. But they run all the way up to Southern California, unusually. But pretty much it's from Ecuador to Peru. And from Ecuador to Baja is their range. And they're a very shallow water, warm water species. You won't find them in deep water. So they differ because of the in behavior, because of the turbulence. For example, mm-hmm. in the rough water in the Pacific, they're pretty much ambush predators. Not solely, but they're pretty much ambush predators, whereas in the clear waters of Baja and so on and so forth, they're chase predators. They'll chase them. But so their behavior is different depending on where they're at. And I really think it's almost like they're two different species, the ones that you find in Baja and calm waters and the ones that you find in the Pacific.
By the way, their migration,
they do migrate primarily, they're a homebody mostly. They keep to their home range within reason. Every now and then they have excursions offshore, but the primary thing when they move is migrating to spawn. And they can move miles or even up to a few hundred miles to spawn. And typically it's water temperatures, time of the year and water temperature that ignites that migration opportunity. And often the closer you get to the equator, the earlier that is. If you're in really hot water, best time might be May. If you're further away, if you're further north in Baja or further south in Ecuador, it might be in June when they move. So that's their primary. The other time that they move, I wouldn't call it migrating, but they can move distances, is if they're opportunists. If they get a big school of bait fish, they'll chase it for miles or even further. They'll stay with them for days or even a week to take care of that.
Oh, wow.
So it's the migration and the food are their primary migration times.
Jason Stacy in Kentucky asks, what are some of the other fish you can catch when chasing roosters?
That's one of the nice things. Not only are the roosters found in the, probably some of the most beautiful areas in the world, but the fish that you catch with roosters are terrific. For example, I think I would say number one would be Cabera snappers. I mean, tough, tough fish to catch in their own right, really hard fighters. They're great, but they like structure, you know, in rough water, just like rooster fish do. You know, you find a rooster, you'll find a Cabera, and vice versa. The Cabera, they like to hide out in, oh, some hidey hole, a cave, or behind some structure, and you hook one, and the first thing they want to do is go to where they live. In shallow water, I've caught them in reefs, and boy, they'll cut you off. I mean, they're amazing. But others, one of the, maybe the most beautiful saltwater species is a bluefin trevally, and you'll find them when you find roosters, and they're great fish. A lot of Jack Crevel, they like that tough water. I would say, off the top of my head, grouper, a lot of groupers. African pompano, they like the same kind of water. So there's a host of other, and tarpon. You know, there's a lot of tarpon in the Pacific now, and I mean a lot of tarpon. I remember taking a photograph, and, oh, I was with Dr. Jeff Simpson, and, oh, at least 25 years ago, near Karate, Costa Rica, and I saw a school of tarpon with some really big rooster fish and a couple really big Jack Crevel, and they wouldn't eat anything. I threw everything known to man at those things, including some great, great patterns, and they wouldn't eat. But anyway, they hang out with good, in really good company with some really great game fish.
Good, good. We're going to take a quick break here, Tom. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of your first encounters and early lessons with roosters. So hang tight, everybody, and
that's a bloody
we'll be
tale.
Right back. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming, has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. The selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call, and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com, or you could call them at 866-845-9284. Again, the uglybugflyshop.com, or call them at 866-845-9284. If you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Tom Boyd about magnificent rooster fish. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Tom, I always ask my guests, you know, at this time of the show, is, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? Now, I know you're working on this third book, right? So I'm imagining that's taking a lot of your time. And just tell us what's happening with you.
Well, I mean, the writing, not only on the books, but, you know, the articles and the lectures and the teaching. The teaching and the research are really, really important to me. Probably the latest teaching event my son Jeff and I had, the Tropic Star Lodge is was rated the best lodge in saltwater lodge in the world, and they're terrific. They're great for billfish, but they're also a great rooster fishery. We were hired to figure that fishery out, and a couple of years ago they had their first annual Legend on Fly event. My son Jeff and I were invited along with Stu Apt, and unfortunately Stu couldn't make it. His wonderful wife Janine was ill, and so we took over pretty much the instruction, and we work with their captains and mates and so on and so forth. We were invited back this past June and, you know, work with them again and got everybody sailfish on fly, including the three of the Tropic Star managers, and it was really fun. As a matter of fact, one of our anglers, we fished not only with the Tropic Star people, we hosted a trip and had anglers, and I had one of my anglers, Alan Todd, who was 86, not only caught sailfish and other species, but two bluefin marlin on a fly. And Alan's got to be the oldest guy in history to catch a bluefin marlin on a fly, and it was just wonderful. They hadn't caught one on a fly in many months. And in any event, it was really an honor. So that's the kind of things that we're doing. We visit, we lecture, we teach, and research. We just hooked up again in Mongolia. We're researching giant taimen, you know, other species. We work with the government there. We just hooked up to do research on roosterfish with some of the most impressive people on the planet. So We stay busy, believe me. And we host trips, so we work on that, you know. And in my spare time, oh, my.
Yeah. Sounds like the two of you are very busy. So, well, good
I just
for
wrote
you
a science fiction novel as well.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Well, let's talk about first encounters. Tell us about your very first encounter with a rooster fish in Costa Rica, Nicaragua border. What did you see? How did you, you know, what happened?
I was fishing in this long time ago, so you're testing my memory, but I was fishing out of Santa Rosa National Park. Actually, it's right on the Nicaragua border. As a matter of fact, I came down from Nicaragua, and I fished there, and I was fishing for black snook. That area is wonderful. It's a dry desert forest and some great sandy beaches, rough water. You know, it's tidal. A lot of these areas are tidal, and it was really rough water, so great rooster fish habitat. I was fishing, and I wasn't familiar with rooster fish at all. And all of a sudden, while we were just moving from one spot to another, I saw this, like it was like a lit up yellow school bus greyhounding across the surface, chasing a school of mullet. And I asked my captain, I said, "What the hell is that?" And he said, "El gallo, senor, el gallo." And I said, "Let's get one of them." He told me, "Muy difficult, very difficult." And I kind of argue with him, because back then I thought I had caught hundreds of sails and marlin and all kind of things, and I thought I was like a real hotshot fly fisherman. You know, like I was an idiot savant. The only thing I could do, and I said, "No way, fish is that aggressive. I can catch it. If it's got fins on it, I can catch it." Well, he was right and I was wrong. We chased, we tried to catch, and you know, I had zero success. But what that did, I said, it was the challenge. I said, "By God, I'm going to get one of those." And I researched them, and I found out nobody had ever caught a big one. So that was my goal. And I traveled everywhere. I mean, I traveled pretty much throughout their range, Roger. But I had a hell of a time because my learning curve flatlined. I mean, if you don't catch any, you can't learn. What I learned was what not to do. And, boy, that was a lot.
There was a lot, yeah.
And I was introduced to humility and said, well, maybe I can't catch everything with fins on it, you know. After that, I enlisted the help of my son, Jeff, and we really hammered on these guys, on techniques. And slowly we learned, but it was a slow process. We caught a few here and a few there, but, again, it was a slow process, and again, that's why I think it's catching a big rooster fish, because the bigger they get, the tougher they are to catch on a fly. Catching a big rooster fish in the open Pacific waters, I think, is saltwater's greatest challenge.
Yeah, it just reminds me, Thomas Edison said, you know, he was asked or something, you know, "You failed so many times to invent the light bulb, and 10,000 times," he said, "No, it was things that I learned that didn't work, but I didn't fail." Same kind of thing, right?
Yeah,
process of elimination. That didn't work. And then finally, someday, you reach it. So when did you catch the first, when was it? How many years later or months or whatever?
Well, the first big one. I caught lots and lots, but they were not. My son and I, we came up with a definition of a large rooster fish, and we said, if it's 40 pounds and above, and at that, going back 25, 30 years ago, nobody had ever caught one over 30 pounds. I don't even think it came close to that, but on a fly and using IGFA rigs. So we figured 40 pounds was, that was the deal. And I caught my first one was in Zihuatanejo, in the Mora de Pazzi in Zihuatanejo. And I took my family, my wife, Rosemary, and my daughter, we went down to Zihuatanejo, and I had lots of gear and prototype flies specifically designed for rooster fish. But when I checked on, they had, back then Continental Airlines was in business, and they had changed carry-on, and a lot of my luggage I couldn't take, rods and reels, and in any event, or my photographic equipment, so they checked it. So anyway, we end up landing in Zihuatanejo. And as soon as we got, and again, except what I had on me carrying, I had two rods and three lefties, big eye deceivers, and some 10-pound tippet and 20-pound tippet. That was it. All my other gear and prototypes and camera, professional cameras, they were all with Continental. And long story short, when we got to the lodge right on the water, while we were checking in, I walked on the water and I saw a school of baitfish mullet jumping right on the beach. I mean, in absolute panic, and nothing drives panic into a baitfish like a roosterfish. They don't have really teeth. You can grab them by the gums. They have them inside their mouth, but you'd think for a basically toothless fish, why would they be so ferocious? And they are. They're ferocious. And as soon as I saw those mullet jumping on the beach, I said, rooster. So in any event, I went out with my captain day after day, and I was dedicated, even though my equipment, I had an 8-weight and a 10-weight Scott rods, and I was pro with Islander reel at the time, and two Islander reels with me, and that's what I was stuck with. I couldn't buy any flies. I couldn't anything. So we fished, and I fished for 5 or 6 days, and I don't false cast, but then I did. I have had a lot of injuries, and I must have cast 1,000 times a day, and I did this day after day after day. My captain thought I was nuts because they were catching lots of sailfish, lots of marlin, lots of mahi-mahi right offshore. So I was absolutely determined that I was going to catch a roosterfish. So finally, and maybe the last hour, the last day that I was there, I hooked the fish that I've been trying to catch for so many years. And when it was an unbelievable struggle. I mean, it took me 42 minutes. And keep in mind, again, I learned a lot of my tactics from Stu Apt, you know, who has caught so many fish, big fish, tarpon, sails, and bring them back to the boat in 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And that's what I was capable of, you know, but really, this fish took me 42 minutes. I used all of Stu's techniques, the few additional ones that I had, and I'll tell you, this fish was pound for pound. We measured it in the water, fought to death. That's the only reason I kept them, because I'm a catch-and-release fisherman, but we couldn't revive him. But we measured it in the water, and I took all his measurements, and I used, you know, the formula, and he was 53.5 pounds. We took it to, when I got to town, and again, no camera. The mate had a little $2 camera, and he took a picture of it. And anyway, when I got to town, I went to get to my wife at the lodge we were staying at to get a camera, and my daughter took my fish to the only official weigh station in town. And when I finally got there, they had filleted the fish. When I asked for it, they gave me two plastic bags. So I asked him, I need the carcass. So they brought the carcass out that had been filleted, and we weighed that, and it was 41.5 pounds. And that's still the IGFA 12-pound record, because I caught it on a 10-pound tippet, but they don't have a 10-pound category, so they upped it to 12-pound. And Lefty Cray, who I was doing the Caslow Shallow Water Show with Lefty and Stu and those guys back then, Flip, and in any event, Lefty, who used to keep all the IGFA world records, he said he thought that was maybe the greatest catch of the 90s, because I only had a 20-pound shock tippet, and they don't have teeth, but their gums are like, they do have teeth inside, but they're tiny. They have crushers and things inside, but their gums are like sandpaper, and they break. You need a 30 or 40-pound tippet. I didn't have that shock tippet. I had a 10-pound line class and a 20-pound shock, so it was something, and it was, at that time, that was, I think, the biggest fish, and it still might be, my whole career. You know, I've caught some unbelievably, you know, 340-pound blue marlin on a fly, things like that. But this was, I tried so hard for so long to catch this, it was really meaningful to me.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds like quite the event and accomplishment for sure. So I was confused when you said you weighed this in. You said it was 53.5 or 42 pounds.
Okay,
I'm confused.
You can take measurements. We take the girth squared times the length divided by 800. That gives you the weight. And IGFA uses a measurement like that to check, you know, weights and measures that you send in. So I use that to measure fish. I'll take, while they're still in the water and alive, again, I'm catching relief fishermen, I take their measurements, and that can tell me, that tells me very close how big they are. And this fish, when I took the measurements, it measured out at 53.5 pounds. When they filleted it, there were 12 pounds of fillet, so he ended up, you know, he was 41.5 pounds.
Oh, so, yeah, not sure you had all the parts and pieces at that point, I guess, anyway.
Well, we didn't put the fillets back on. They just, measured it like, they measured the carcass, or they weighed it.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, weighed the carcass, yeah, very interesting. Time for another break here real quick, and we'll come back and talk some more about strategies and tactics on catching these fish. So hang tight. We'll be right back. Discover the power of pure Skagit with Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics. From delicate soft hackles to hefty steelhead flies, OPST's versatile casting system meets the demands of every angling situation. With Ed Ward's unparalleled Skagit rod design and casting expertise, OPST offers you a quicker route to mastering effective casting techniques. Whether battling wind and rain or targeting steelhead trout or smallmouth bass, trust OPST's innovative rods, lines, and tips to elevate your fishing experience. Join the ranks of skilled anglers who rely on OPST for consistency, proficiency, and a superior fly fishing adventure. Unleash your potential with OPST today. Visit PierceGadget.com, or you can call them at 206-858-8476. Again, that's PierceGadget.com, or call them at 206-858-8476. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Tom Boyd about magnificent wrister fish. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Okay, Tom, now, how did that world record catch open the doors for you, including your work with Crocodile Bay in Costa Rica?
Well, it really did. I mean, one, it impressed Lefty, and at the Castle Shallow Water Boat Show, Robin Williams, who was, and God bless him, he died about 6 years ago. But at that time, he was the owner of Crocodile Bay Lodge in Costa Rica. And he saw that I had this world record rooster fish. And at Crocodile Bay, he had, 35, 40 boats. And the second most popular species in Costa Rica, or common species rather, were roosterfish, and they're very visible with their combs, and they're on the Gulf of Dulce, and they'd be going out in their boats, and you could see them chasing baitfish, but nobody had ever caught one on a fly. And Robin talked to me and said, Tom, I want you to come down and work with my captains and mates and, you know, teach them how to catch a roosterfish on a fly. And I said, and this is the honest to God's truth, I said, Robin, well, my technique is to get on and cast so my arm's about ready to fall off day after day after day. when my captain thinks I'm an absolute lunatic because there's all kind of other species available, and I keep coming up empty and, you know, day after day, and I won't quit, I said, until the village idiot swims by and eats my fly, you know, in the last possible moment. And I said, so if you want me to come and teach your captains and your mates that, I'll be glad to. And he said to me, he said, no, Tom, I'm really serious. And I said, Robin, so am I. But he hired me anyway. And I said, I did tell him, I said, you know, I have some prototype flies, the ones that I, you know, wanted to take to Zihuanejo, and I was never able to use them. So I've got some really good flies, and I think some good with them, I think I can use some, you know, good tactics that I wasn't able to. And I said, I'll be glad to come down and try them out, and if they work, then I'll be glad to work with your people. So that was the basis, and he hired me. But had I not caught that rooster fish, I wouldn't have had the, you know, the big one. And with Lefty's presence and so forth, then I probably wouldn't have really gotten into the teaching of rooster fish. That really opened a lot of doors. And not only that, I was really writing a lot back then, and I was editor-in-chief of a couple fly fishing magazines and editor-at-large. And anyway, I wrote a lot of articles on how to, and a lot of other people read those articles and got back to me, and they were able to catch rooster fish. I think I had that catching that fish And then the knowledge that I learned and the flies that I used at Crocodile Bay that worked, talking to other people and saying, these are the things that work, these are the kind of techniques that have worked for me, allowed all of a sudden a lot more people were starting to catch rooster fish. And I think when they had success, I think that helped lead to the popularity of rooster fish. And today their popularity is just exploding. I mean, they're tremendously popular. So it really opened the doors for me. And in fact, even that, when on the Legends on Fly at Tropic Star, that knowledge, that used to be called the Club de Pesca. And Ray Smith discovered or created that lodge in 1961. Stu App sets the two longest setting saltwater record, existing saltwater world records there, and a 58-pound mai-mai and a 136-pound sailfish there. And let me see, in 1964 and 1965. Well, in all that time, and all the pros that had fished at Tropic Star Lodge trying to get rooster fish, because there's lots of them there, nobody was ever successful in catching one, ever. When I first went to the Legend on Fly event there in 2 years ago in 2024, it took me 5, maybe 10 minutes, and I caught the first rooster fish there ever for anybody. And a lot of the top fly fishermen ever, the biggest names in fly fishing, tried and weren't successful. So all that research and development of techniques, tactics, and flies, et cetera, paid off, and it's still paying off.
Let's talk about your tackle and gear before we get into some of the strategies, tackle, gear, and flies here. So what's your preferred rod, reel, line setup for rooster fishing in Costa Rica?
Well, there's a lot. I've got about, 150 rods. If you're going to go after a rooster fish, this is what I would say. Catching a big rooster fish on a fly is an experience of a lifetime. So I would say buy a quality rod. I mean, if you're going to spend all the kind of money that some of these places charge, because that's where the fish are at, buy a good rod. Loomis, Scott, Sage, Orvis, rods like that, that's what you're going to need. I think I fish with lighter rods, but I think even a good angler, I think, would be well suited if he fished a 10, 11, or 12-weight fly rod. There are some good bargain rods around, I think. Reddington's got a Predator, I believe. I have a couple of those. TFO has always had a quality rod at good prices. The new thing is spay rods or switch rods. Switch are usually up to 11, 12-foot spays, longer than that. A lot of the areas that you go to, you aren't be able to access from shore. You have to be in a boat. And a lot of the places, particularly in the open Pacific, you can't get near shore. The water is rough. If you get too near shore, then you become part of the shore. That's happened to me a couple of times, believe me. So in any way, a spay rod is something where you can stay more than 100 feet offshore and cast a decent-sized fly. One of the techniques that I worked with years ago, I created a fly that was anything would eat it, but it cast like a brick. And in any event, so I wanted to cast it because I knew it, but I had to cast it a long distance. So I broke all the conventions and techniques, and I took a 12-weight rod, and I had a 1,000-grain line. And usually when you're fishing a 1,000-grain line, that's a bottom dredger. That's a heavy, heavy-duty sink line. And usually when you're fishing sink lines, you have a short leader. Well, I put about a 10-foot leader on it and put my fly on it. And I could cast that because it was such a heavy line. I'd stay 100 feet offshore or so, cast it right up on the beach, the fly. Then I would pull it back, and my fly floated, and it would pop up in the surf. And in the surf, that's where the roosters were. And I'd see them come down my fly line would sink and be laying on the bottom. But I needed a heavy, heavy-duty fly line to cast my brick-casting fly. And I caught a number of rooster fish there, and it was one of the most exciting things. It really was. So the techniques, that technique, if I told that to somebody that'd say, you're nuts, that'll never work, Matter of fact, again, we went through every kind of scenario you can imagine to try to figure out how to catch these guys, and that was one of them that worked.
That was one of them, yeah. We did get a question here on the internet, Jeff Simpson in Michigan. He says, do you prefer fishing on top with floating lines for roosters? Is there a place for intermediate and sinking lines under certain conditions? Well, obviously, you tell us a way with sinking lines that's definitely not traditional, right? Yeah, who would have ever thought of that? Only Tom Boyd.
Well, that's cool. Again, I said earlier, Roger, I prefer on top, and that's the most fun, and you see that, but you bet. It's just tougher. I went down to Crocodile Bay with a good friend of mine, Arnie Costello, and he's a great fly tyer and plugs. He was wonderful, you know, 1,000 times better than I ever was. And he developed some really good flies and thought they would work down in the water column. And he couldn't catch any fish. He finally caught. I have a picture of him in my book and a picture of him in the article that I just did. His first cast with using my gear and my fly, after he was successful for several days using his on the surface, and he caught a 40-pound rooster fish, and it was the catch of his life. But the answer to Jeff Simpson's question, and I fished with Jeff. He's a great friend, and he was with me, by the way, in Costa Rica, and we saw the tarpon and with the rooster fish and so on and so forth. But anyway, to answer the question, intermediate and sink tip, yes, but you need a really good fly. I work with a number of people on top. I work with Rich Strollis. He's one of the best fly tyers in the world on really great imitations of mullet and sardine de gallo, the sardines. And we came up with an articulated fly. It's got a little bit of a head on it, but it's created, it's a great imitation, and that's designed to work down in the water column. And it works. Again, but you've got to have a top quality fly, not only the presentation, not only match the hatch. For example, your hooks, Gamagatsu or Owner, you better have some great hooks, because one thing about rooster fish, when they hit, different than other fish where you might, like a sailfish, you might wait till they turn and set the hook at an angle, or even a trout, you can wait a second or two for it to eat the fly. With a rooster fish, they eject a fly quicker than any other species I'm aware of. So you need to set the hook, and you need a sharp hook because their mouth's like concrete. You need to set it immediately. And also, if you're fishing deep, you got to do it with using braid. You can't use any kind of backing that has stretch to it. The braid, you can feel the fish. So you got to keep a tight line when you're done, intermediate or at depth. And you got to keep a tight line. And once you feel that hit, you got to set the hook immediately. But, yeah, you can tell Jeff, yes, you can. You know, it's just.
It just depends on what technique you're using as to what line you would be using. Yeah. Now, have you used your terminal tackle? You had mentioned earlier, you know, shock tippets and leaders and so forth. So are you using fluorocarbon? And if, you know, what is your setup for terminal tackle?
I prefer fluorocarbon. You know, or sometimes the option is hard mono, not regular mono. Mono stretches. The big advantage of fluorocarbon is it doesn't stretch. It's invisible. It really is pretty much abrasion resistance, and that's the kind of thing that's important with rooster fish. They're in structure, they're in rock piles, and I mean, so you need something that's abrasion resistance. And I mean, it's pretty much invisible, it's UV resistant. But I think the only disadvantage with fluorocarbon, well, there is one with trout, you know, a tiny little trout, if you're fishing at 22 dry, it, you know, fluorocarbon will sink, but it's invisible. And the bad part about it, the bad thing is that it's expensive. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, it's worth it. Again, if you're going to go after the roosters, don't cheat on your rod, don't cheat on your reel, and don't cheat. Have gel spun backing and use fluoro.
Gel spun braid backing,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
One thing about gel spun, though, the danger is, but this especially with big fish and strong fish like roosters or sails or marlin, it can cut you. You need gloves, and I keep my fingers on the line always. So you need finger guards, or tape. You can tape them up, and gloves, because I keep my finger on the line, because especially if you're going down deep, You need to feel that. And with gel spun, you can. I mean, if you move, if you're out 100 feet of line or 200 feet of line and something takes, moves your fly an inch, if you've got that gel spun, you can feel it. So keep my finger on the line, but again, with protection, that's important.
Yeah, yeah, good tip. Need to take another quick break here, Tom, so hang tight, and we'll be right back.
Yes, sir.
Fly Fishers International needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. The organization provides grants to help with the restoration of habitats like Wolf Creek in Idaho and Sands Creek in Delaware County, New York, and funds projects that collect valuable data about fish and their habitats like the Peacock Bass Study in Miami, Florida. FFI serves as a strong advocate for fly fishing in all waters for all fish, to preserve and to promote the arts of fly casting and fly tying, and to help ensure future generations can continue to enjoy these one-of-a-kind experiences. These efforts won't be nearly as effective without your help. If you're not already a member, we invite you to join Fly Fishers International as they work to cultivate conservation, education, and community within the sport of fly fishing. Join Fly Fishers International today and help support their fine work. And for more information about FFI, you can go to flyfishersinternational.org. That's flyfishersinternational.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Tom Boyd about magnificent roosterfish. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, just go to our website, fill out that form, and we'll try to answer your questions tonight on the show. All right, Tom, you started talking about flies there, so I wanted to dig into that a little bit more. The fly that you were talking about, was that the wounded baitfish fly, or is that a different fly that you developed?
No, that was the...
Articulated? Yeah.
No, the Boyd's wounded baitfish was really the first, actually the second. I had a prototype of that fly, but I lost it after Crocodile Bay. It was one of the prototypes I had. And in any event, from that prototype, I developed Boyd's wounded baitfish. And basically, what it was is when I went to Crocodile Bay, Robin Williams, he said, Tom, whatever you need, whatever personnel you need to help you to figure out how to catch these, you got it. So we built a pen to hold bait fish, and Robin gave me a number of people that went out and caught every kind of bait fish that you can think of. And we experimented with them in trolling. We'd rig them, we'd bridle rig them and troll live fish to attract, you know, roosters, and then when they attacked, we'd pull our bait fish and replace it with our fly. And the fish that worked the best was in Costa Rica, at Crocodile Bay, was a sardine de gallo, a sardine with a yellow stripe on it. It's different, a different species in other areas. Some places it's mullet, some places Pacifica bonita, you know, up to maybe about 3 pounds. But anyway, that's the, and by the way, after we finished all that research, one of the helpers said, that's sardine de gallo. And I said, what's that? He says, the fish for the rooster fish. And I said, oh my, why didn't you tell me that at the beginning instead of the end, you know? But anyway, so I designed this fly that would emulate that. And one thing about the fly, it was made to work on the surface, because one thing about sardine de gallo, when they herd balls of bait fish, unlike most other bait fish that flee to the bottom, these sardines flee to the surface. And there were lots of them there, and that's why at Crocodile Bay, the rooster fish are so obvious, because there's so many sardine, and they chase them and they go to the surface, and so you see them busting on the surface all the time. So the fly, the Boyd's wounded bait fish, had, I made it with an easy body, and it had a Softex is a product made out of California, had a Softex head, and we had put some foam inside of it so that it would float. It made it look exactly like a sardine de gallo with a yellow stripe on it. And anyway, everything ate that thing, sails, marlin, and roosterfish. The problem with it is it didn't cast, like that's the one I was referring to earlier, that cast like a brick.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, and I could make that work because that's what I do that for a living. I mean, I'm a professional fly fisherman, and my son could make it work. But the average fisherman, it wasn't a good solution because it just was too difficult. They couldn't cast it, you know, 25 feet, so it was difficult. So The thing is, it was the principles of that fly, the characteristics of that fly, you know, that it was on the surface. And it made commotion because roosterfish are such visual predators. You can attract them, okay, but they won't eat. They come up and the refusal rate for roosters is off the charts, even greater than like marlin or cabera, some other really tough species. So that there's a tremendous refusal rate. So when we changed that, we kept some of the principles of it, but we changed it to make, you know, more of a popper-like fly that was articulated. Okay, so we took the chugger and popper flies. They worked best, but improving it to making it the right size, the right shape, making it articulated, which meant it had, you know, more movement in it, and making it the right colors, that worked. So that was our improvement on the Boyd's wounded baitfish. That was on the surface. Down, we talked a little bit about this. Rich Strollis developed some really great mullet and sardine patterns that were articulated and well tied. And again, you can't buy one of these off the shelf. He's a custom fly tier and world class.
Still there, Tom?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, okay. You just kind of cut out there. Yeah, I didn't know if you were still on. Yeah, Rich Strollis. I've actually interviewed Rich on the show here.
Terrific guy.
It's been many years ago. Yeah.
I put him on the cover of one of my magazines one time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Trying to see what I interviewed him on, because it's been quite a while. Yeah. Streamer Strategies. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's got a great book.
He's up on the Housatonic. Yeah, Farmington and Housatonic is his stomping grounds, I guess. Yeah.
I just heard from him. He got back. His family was in Alaska. Yeah, he's a good, great guy. Great guy.
Yeah. So what size are these flies? I mean, you say matching the hatch. So they need to be the same as whatever the bait fish are that they're pursuing is. So it's not a matter of how big or small they are. It's a matter of being the right size, right? So,
well, you know, for example, the Boyd's wounded baitfish, the first fly that really, actually the second, but really the first one that we did in mass, the typical fly, I would say, including the tail, was about 6 inches long, and that was about an average size of what the sardine de gallos were. For example, at Tropic Star Lodge, they aren't many sardines de gallo there, but they use, when they're trolling, they use bonita, and they're about 3 pounds. So that's a big fly. But anchovies are the number one food that roosterfish eat, anchovies. And anchovies don't get very big. So the range that they eat, you know, I'll go from anywhere from about a 2.5 to 3 inch fly with just maybe a size 1 or 2 hook up to maybe an 8 inch fly with hook size maybe 5 or 6. And we like to use not only the articulated flies, but with a stinger, double hooks. And I like to use, say if I'm using an average 5 or 6 inch fly, maybe I would use 3-aught with maybe a 1-aught or a 2-aught trailer. We like to stick that trailer near where the tail is. And we catch a lot more fish on that trailer hook than we do on the primary hook.
So larger flies don't necessarily mean larger roosters either, right? It depends on what they're feeding on.
It depends on what they're feeding on. But generally, you know, I mean, they feed on larger fish. For example, if you see terns flying, they're usually over small bait fish, terns working in the air. If you see seagulls working, they're maybe working on bigger bait fish. If you see a large bird of prey, maybe they're feeding on mullet, which are bigger. And usually the bigger bait fish, they attract bigger fish. And usually, like in roosters, even when they herd fish, if you see lots of rooster fish, they're usually smaller. The exception is when they're herding fish, big roosters might work in cooperation with one another. But usually, again, that's on pretty good size. You know, like, again, if you see a pelican, they're not usually working over anchovies. You know, they're working over sardines, or they're working over bonito, or they're, you know, working over mullet, you know, something like that. So there's some truth to big flies, big fish. There is, but it's not, I think that's secondary to having the proper size, matching the hatch, so to speak.
So the flies we've just been talking about, would those all be, these are flies that you would use down in like Costa Rica, right? Or
yes.
Panama.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
in the
actually,
Pacific.
Anywhere. Anywhere.
Even in Baja for that type of fishing?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Again, there's some John, I can't pronounce his last name, but Icon Products, John Rozanovich. He has the best Icon Products. Check that out. It's in California. He's a good rooster fisherman, and he developed some flies with his Softex head that dive deep. I should have mentioned these earlier. He's successful fishing down in the water column. Jeff Simpson's question earlier, I think those flies are as good as Rich Strollis's flies, you know, articulated, the ones that, I designed. They work well to intermediate and down in the water column.
Okay. So these flies that we've been talking about, would these be in Costa Rica, would you primarily be fishing them with the bridled baitfish technique of attracting them with that? And then,
yeah, see, one thing about fishing the open Pacific, you're really restricted. You can't get to the shore in most places. A few places you can, but for example, at Tropic Star Lodge or Crocodile Bay, using those two, which are two of the greatest areas to rooster fish in the world, you don't fish from shore. A few of the natives do, but it's rough. The tides are rough. I mean, you're going to get kind of wet or kind of dead. I mean, the surf is rough. So you're pretty much restricted to fishing from a skiff or a small boat. Again, unless some of the techniques, that there's some special techniques, one of which I talked about earlier, which most people wouldn't do. Most people like using a 1,000-grain line. Most people, they're not going to do that. Nor could they do that. But you're restricted in Costa Rica, whereas, say, in Baja, you can fish from the beach. I mean, you can run down the beach. Again, you can. It's like a lot of times it's like being in a track meet. I've done that. Yeah. I mean, particularly up near Loreto. I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, you can run down the beach, you know, and cast from shore. Those things work. So it depends on where you're at for what your techniques are. And, again, the greatest thing, something I mentioned earlier, before you go, do your homework. How, when, where, what kind of gear you should bring. If you're fishing in Baja, you need some track shoes.
Yes, so Tropic Star or Crocodile Bay would be the two. If you were serious about going after rooster fish in the Pacific, that's where you would go. That's where you would send people, correct? I mean, because the guides know what to do there and can put you on a fish.
Well, you know, in all of the research, been through the entire range of the rooster fish, and if you look at not only the world records, but both Jeff and my success have happened in four different areas, that Costa Rica, Panama, Baja, and Mexico near Estapa and Zihuatanejo. Linda Beach runs north of there, and the Morro de Pazzi in that area is offshore, and that's where I caught my world record rooster fish. By the way, I caught lots and lots of world record rooster fish that Jeff and I released. And I mean a lot of them. When we first went to Crocodile Bay, almost all the fish we caught the first two fish I caught were 27 and 32 pounder. Both of them were world records. After that, we caught many, many more and many bigger, several times bigger than that. And we turned them all loose. Jeff doesn't have a record on that, but he caught, you know, lots and lots of them. And on certain days, we'd catch a record fish and later catch even a bigger one. But those four areas are the best areas. But again, they're different. You can fish from shore in Zihuatanejo and Estapa. You can fish from shore in Baja. You're not going to fish from shore at Tropic Star Lodge or at Crocodile Bay. You're in a boat. So that's the difference.
And when you say when you're in the boat, is your guide moving up and down the shore? Is this a small boat? Or is this a larger boat that you'd fish from?
Well, almost all the boats at Tropic Star are 31-foot Bertrams. The smallest ones they have at Crocodile Bay are 24-footers. Again, they have to be a certain size and be seaworthy because the waters, even in close to shore, can get, you know, get pretty tough. So they're, and what you do is, just like if you're an individual going there and reading the water, that's what the captains do, except they've been there for years and years and years. I think probably the average captain at, for example, at Tropic Star, they might have been there for 15 or 20 years as a mate. So they know the water. And even if you go to a place where you can, like, where you can walk the beach, I recommend you getting a guide always, at least for a while. Again, why spend the time and the effort and the money and get somewhere and try to figure out something that might take you quite a while to figure it out? So I say hire a guide. But with these, the guides do, they not only read the conditions, and I'm talking about the shore conditions. For example, if you're running, and if you're in Costa Rica or Panama and you're running and you see a really nice beach, a nice fine sand, say, boy, I'd like to go up there and lay on that beach. That's what it's for. It's not for rooster fish. They're not going to be there. You know, if it's nice and comfortable, they're not there. The roosters are where the structure's at. The structure is what holds bait fish. And they hide in little things and behind things and under things. And that's why they're there. And so the roosters are attracted to structure. So even if I'm walking down a nice beach in Baja and I see a bunch of rocks, I'm going to go fish the rocks. If I see a peninsula, I'm going to go fish, depending on which way the tide is coming or the wind, I'll fish one side of the peninsula or other. I do the same thing that one of the captains or guides do. The difference, they have experience. Most of these, the guides, a lot of them are natives, indigenous people. In Tropic Star, they're the Embera tribe. They've got vision better than I do. I mean, they're incredible. They know that water. Their fathers were guides. Their grandfather or commercial fishermen. Their grandfathers were. I mean, they know the water. They live on the water. The same thing at Costa Rica. I mean, I still remember from years ago, you know, my guides, they were my guides, my captains. I've learned from them. I hope I taught them a few things here and there, and we're friends forever. I mean, it was, but they do the same thing. They read the bird action. I mean, you can see birds flying over. They're flying over. They're looking for fish. If you see birds sitting, they're waiting for fish. If you see birds working, there's bait fish there. And that's where, if the the roosters aren't there now, they're going to be coming there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Let's say you are lucky enough to hook up with one of these these big rooster fish. What tips can you give the folks on fighting them and bringing them to the boat?
Okay. If you're counting on luck to catch the rooster fish, forget it. I mean, you better talk to me if you don't know about rooster fish or somebody that knows. But if you're lucky to catch one, they are a tough customer. Again, you got to have a good gear. You got better have. You got to test all your gear. You need a great rod. You need the 300 yards of, you know, gel spun backing. You need a good reel. I use Nautilus and Sage. Abel's a great one. Low price budget reel is a Reddington. You need a great drag system. You really do. I mean, something that'll stop a truck because they can get tough. You can't make any mistakes. I like to fight with them all the time, almost, with a low rod. They're a fish like tarpon. If they jump, you bow to the fish. That means you extend your rod out. I stick mine in the water when they jump, or they can break you off, especially if you're fishing with a light tippet, and I do a lot of that. So you have to bow to the fish. I like to change directions a lot. I mean, one of the things I learned from the great legendary angler Stu Apt, you know, and most of, he's caught more giant tarpon than probably everybody else put together. But changing the directions, beat the fish psychologically. And rooster fish, pound for pound, are amongst the hardest fighting fish. I mean, in my book, I rank them in the saltwater book, you know, the toughest game fish to catch, pound for pound. And in the original book, I put rooster fish number 3. When we update that book one day, I think I'll move them to number 1. They're that tough. But I put them up there pond for pond with like Kubera and bluefish. A lot of people don't like bluefish. For a little fish, they fight like hell. Bones fight like hell. But so you really have to manner your P's and Q's. And again, I like that low rod. And we haven't talked about, and I don't know if you're going to ask about it, but The retrieval is very, very, very important.
Yeah. Why don't you hit on that as our last topic here, because we're running out of time. But, yeah,
okay.
Go for it.
You can't retrieve fast enough. You can't. And the only other tech, I mean, stick a rod under your armpit and strip with both hands. You can't strip fast enough on the surface. And the other thing I like to do, especially on the surface, if I'm not stripping fast, like a wounded bait fish, a rooster fish will attack a ball of bait, kill a lot, and then go back and clean up the wounded ones. So they'll be flopping around on the surface. I like to take my rod back and forth and just jig my surface fly back and forth like a wounded bait fish. And that's a technique that works. But again, you need a good fly to do that.
Yeah, yeah. What? Go ahead.
Can I mention
something
about the conservation?
I was just going to ask you about that. So.
Okay. Well, Robin Williams and Todd Staley at Crocodile Bay years ago started a program. They work with the people at Los Sueños Marina up in Costa Rica. But recently, my son Jeff and I were working with Jason Schratwater, who's the president of IGFA, and Bruce Pout, who is the director of conservation for IGFA, a terrific outfit. And we're working with Dr. Sofia Ortega-Garcia. She's, again, this is the first meaningful roosterfish research. We need to kill a large roosterfish. And we're catch and release people, but we've done this in the past on some rare species, and because we need to dissect it. We need to dissect these because really nothing is known about this incredible fish. I mean, we don't even know how old they get. Sophia did work on aging, but only on from tiny little rooster fish. And we know that they grow very, very quickly for the first year or so. Then they slow down. But we literally know nothing about this. The information that I put in that, the information in Jeff and my article with Complete Fly Fisherman is the most detailed, but almost all of that information is subjective. We learned that through firsthand experience, talking to hundreds, maybe a thousand guides and captains over the years. So that's information we put together, because when you ask somebody, you know, how long does a rooster fish live? They don't know. I mean, they don't know anything about these. And again, so we're working with them. And if anybody, they're trying to raise money. If anybody can contact me, tboyd2020@yahoo.com. If somebody out there wants to donate money to help this cause or learn more about them, contact me. If they want to donate, I can put them in touch with Bruce Pollitt or Dr. Garcia. IGFA is doing a heck of a thing there. And again, this is a wonderful species, and they're the international people that categorize this as a data deficient, meaning we don't know anything about them, and we don't, and they deserve better. If we can learn more about them, we can better protect them.
Is it a protected species in Costa Rica or Panama or Mexico?
Yes, they're catch and release. And in fact, Ursula, the CEO of Tropic Star Lodge, Jeff and I are planning on going back down there, and I just sent, I think it was yesterday, an email seeing if we could get permission, because I think we got to get permission from the government to kill one. But again, we need to do that. We need to take their inner ear for the olives. We need to take, like, their stomach. We need to take a lot of parts from a rooster fish, so we need to sacrifice one large one.
Yeah.
You know, we need one over 133 millimeters.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. And, yeah, this has been great. We got to wrap it up, though, run out of time. But when we return, we're going to be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and one-year membership to Trout Unlimited and two of your books. So stick with us here, both Trout, Salmon, and Char, and Saltwater's Greatest Game Fish. And whoever wins these will be delighted, I'm sure. So stick with me, Tom, for just a couple more minutes, and we'll do just that, and we'll finish up the night. So. The Bonefish
Thank
and Tarpon
you.
Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries, from protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, they can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. Visit btt.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's btt.org. Okay, so hold on a second. It looks like I have to get, I'm unfortunately not organized at the moment here. Hold on.
You sound like
I got so wrapped up. I'm supposed to be doing stuff in the background, and yeah, I get, you know, listening to what you have to say, and I got wrapped up in that and forgot what I was supposed to be doing here. But yeah, give me just 1 second, and we'll get my program up here and running. And let's see here. I tell you what, we'll do yours first, your giveaway, Tom, for your two books, and then I'll do these other two, which is reverse of the way I normally do it, but I can do just that. And
okay,
let's see here. So the question, I'll make this pretty easy tonight, but the question for Tom's show and to win his books is going to be, and by the way, he's got two excellent books, Trout, Salmon, and Char, and Saltwater's Greatest Game Fish. Depending on what your preference would be, if you win, you can decide that and pick one or the other. So I just wanted to let you know that, because I know we've got people, you know, we're dealing with saltwater tonight, so I want to make sure that that was clear. Let's see here. Okay, so, well, let's see here. Actually, I've got this going here now, so let me go back. I'm going to give away the one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And if you haven't joined that organization, do so. They deal with both salt and, as I read earlier, salt and fresh water, warm water, everything, all over the world. So check them out, flyfishersinternational.org. Our winner for that is Carl Jordan in Virginia. Carl Jordan in Virginia. Congratulations, Carl. And let's see if we can get a TU winner here. And what are we looking like here? Hold on. Computer's working a little slow, going through the database here. And come on, come on. Give me a name. Well, not cooperating here. Give this one more try. If it doesn't, we're going to skip it. Oh, hold it. I think I may have something here. And we do. We have Joel Wood. Joel Wood in North Dakota. So, Joel, you're now a TU, your membership for TU taken care of. And if you aren't a member of TU.org, get over there and join that as well, TU.org. And Trout Unlimited would appreciate your support. So there we go. Got those two out of the way. All right. So the question for tonight and winning one of Tom's books, if you're the first or the second person that gets the correct answer in, then you will win one of Tom's books. The question is, Tom emphasized that it's absolutely necessary to be successful with roosterfish is to have what kind of backing on your reel? What kind of backing do you need on your reel to be successful with roosterfish? And I imagine this is the case with many saltwater species, right, Tom?
Yes.
Yeah,
for sure.
Okay, so yeah, we got this.
Hey, and sales, yeah.
Okay. So important thing for your saltwater equipment and supply situation. So it takes a minute for them to hear this, and then we've got to get the responses. So I'm refreshing here, Tom, as we wait for their responses, and hopefully we've get one here. Unless again, my computer's acting up.
Can't live with them. Can't live without them.
technology, yeah.
I failed technology.
You did? Yeah, I know. Yeah, you were talking about that earlier this week. well, it's not coming in. So what we're going to do here is I'm going to go through the people that I'll tell you what, why don't we just do this? Why don't we make it a bonus night and give the two people that won the memberships also the books? And I will contact them. So that's going to be Carl Jordan and Joel Wood. And we'll just give them each a book. I'll reach out to them and find out which ones they want. And then I'll let you know. How's that, Tom?
That works fine with me. You bet.
And it'll be a bonus night for those two gentlemen. If you guys are listening, congratulations. And if you aren't, I'll be contacting you after the show regardless, and we'll get you taken care of. So, hey, Tom, again, appreciate all your knowledge and you sharing it all with us tonight again. And look forward to talking with you on another wonderful topic here shortly, as we've discussed. So thanks for being here.
You bet, Roger. And thanks for having me. And again, you know, you have a great show, and it's a great service to the fly fishing industry and all us anglers out here. I learned from your show, and I'm sure everybody else does too. And so thanks so much.
Yeah, yep. That was the whole idea in the beginning, is to teach people more about fly fishing. And so, I think we do a pretty good job at it. And I thanks again for your kind words. So take care, Tom, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Good night now.
Yeah. Hopefully, all of you have found our podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link in the top line of our menu. In the archive, you'll find over 425 shows now. Just search by keyword phrase, like trout, tarpon, rooster fish, or Madison River, or whatever. And you're going to find something, I think, that you'll be pleasantly surprised and pleased with. Our next broadcast will be October 22nd, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's a show we tried the last session, but I was sick and we couldn't get it done. On that show, I'm going to interview Aaron Jasper, and our show will be Fly Fishing is More Than Euro-Nymphing. So Euro-Nymphing may dominate the rivers, but it's only part of the story. We're going to join Aaron as he reveals why being a versatile angler makes fly fishing more rewarding and more productive. From lessons learned over 44 years on the water, the balance between numbers and trophy fish, to his top five insights from 2025, Aaron is going to share his wisdom that will help you catch more fish and deepen your love of the sport. So be sure to add this upcoming show to your calendar. You'll find a link for the calendar right under Aaron's picture on our homepage of the website. Just click on that, your favorite calendar, and it'll add it to it, and you'll be all set. I'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics, the Ugly Bug Fly Shop, and Watermaster for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing and Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.